The influence of the books that we read as children can have a lasting effect on our lives as adults. I can speak with some authority on that because there are a few books that I read that I still think about a lot as an adult. We're going to be talking about children's books today with a children's book expert, talk about current trends in books and in children's libraries. Katie Horning, our guest, director of the Cooperative Children's Book Center, a library of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And so we'll talk with her about children's books. What do you think about today's children's books? Do you like the children's programming in your library and maybe in your school library or your grandkids' library? I hope you'll join in. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org. Or if you want to post a question up on our Facebook page, go to The Larry Miller Show. That's the title of our page. And tell you what, you can post your question or your comment there. And Katie Horning, welcome. Thanks for being here. Yeah, great to have you with us today.
Thank you. Well, now, of course, I'm curious to hear what those books you read when you were a child were that have stuck with you all these years.
Well, I tell you what, there were some books that Samuel Langhorne Clemens wrote that I have. Tom Sawyer is one that I read. And the Sherlock Holmes books, Arthur Conan Doyle's, I read those as a very young guy. I thought at one time I was going to be a detective because I love those books so much. Now I have a daughter who's 13, and she reads voraciously. She's in the one of the reading programs, what is it called? Accelerated Reader. And I think she's built up about 450 points already for this year, which is a lot of points when you're getting them 5-6 at a time. Mm-hmm. She loves to read, so I'm so happy for that. And you know, as I think about it, what does it do for her? It does a lot for her. What can a book do for a child? Why are they so important?
Well, a book can really open up all kinds of worlds to a child. I think children from a very young age who are exposed to books they start to find out what their own interests are and that they can find out more about those interests. I think it's really important for parents to read aloud to children from an early age. Oh. Don't wait till they get to school. You can start reading to children, you know, when they're babies. And just get them used to that. I think for a lot of young children, the experience of having a book read aloud to them by a parent, there's a lot going on there beyond just hearing the story and looking at the pictures. There's also having the parents' undivided attention for a short period of time, and that means more probably than the story itself or the pictures, and that's coming from someone who loves children's books. But that experience, that side-by-side experience, and you know, when I think about my own childhood, that's what I really remember, is sitting next to my father or my mother and hearing them read. My father used to like to read Edward Lear, which was so funny when I was a child. I loved hearing those words. And A Hole Is to Dig was another favorite in our family. My mother read Winnie the Pooh, those poems, Now We Are Six, so much. And even little golden books that my parents read aloud to us are books that, you know, I look at them today and I think, well, you know, not the greatest story, but yeah. What I remember is the experience of sitting in a chair on my dad's lap, hearing him read Bingity Bangity School Bus or whatever the golden book was.
Yeah, at the time, there's so much fun, and I that was one of my great joys, was sitting and reading to Emily from the time she was barely able to understand that I was reading to her, you know, and then a little longer, a little later. I mean, there were certain favorite books that she knew all the words to the book.
And I bet you did too.
I did too. And if I sometimes I'd play with her a little bit and I'd miss a couple of words and then she'd correct me.
Yeah, yeah.
The Good Night series, Good Night Moon, and And there was a whole series of books about it that were, and I should have looked this up beforehand, but it was about, they were a Canadian author, and it was a turtle. They were all animals, but every story had a little lesson in it. The turtle, God, I can't think of the name of the book now. Somebody will call in and tell
me.
It's a whole series. There were like 25 of them, and I think we read every single one. But there was always, he was having a problem with a friend, or he was learning to ride a bicycle, or he went to the, he broke something and had to go to the hospital, and his experience in the hospital. So all those kinds of things were always a lot of fun to read to her. I you know, those weren't great literature, believe me.
but it was the experience of sharing the book, and and I'd be curious. Maybe your daughter remembers them.
Oh yeah,
she remembers them well.
She would remember the author.
She would remember the title. I think I know which books you're talking about, but I can't bring the name of the. It was all about one little character, and it was whatever his first name was plus turtle.
Yeah.
So
can't think of it right
I
now.
I can picture the books though with their realistic illustrations.
And his relationship with his sister. I mean, there are all kinds of, you know, all these things that happen to kids and adults, for that matter, that a little lesson in every book. The cooperative children's book center, you know, I used to interview Jenny Moore Cruz many, several years back now. And I'm glad, that's why I'm glad that you're back. And hopefully we can get something kind of on a regular basis started, too. But tell us about the CCBC, the Cooperative Children's Book Center.
Sure. The Cooperative Children's Book Center started back in 1963, long before Ginny or I ever worked there. It was originally, believe it or not, in the dome of the State Capitol building.
Oh.
On the fourth floor. And every once in a while, I meet someone who remembers going up to the CCBC when it was in the dome of the Capitol building. And it was established as a joint venture among the School of Education here at UW-Madison, the Library School also at UW-Madison, and then the State Department of Public Instruction. That's where the cooperative comes from in the name. And we have a historical collection. Initially, there were a lot of inquiries from librarians around the state of Wisconsin who were what librarians call weeding their collections, like gardening. Take out the books that are dated, that children aren't reading anymore, that aren't in good condition. And there were some books that they felt weren't for the children of 1963. They were too dated, but they thought they should be somewhere for historical purposes. So part of the CCBC housed those books, and we have a historical collection of 20th century. Now we're moving into some of the 21st century books that are of research interest. But we also get the newest books for children every year, and our definition of child goes from birth through age 18. So we get books for high school students as well that are published for them as opposed to adult books that high school students can read. And we receive pretty much everything from the U.S. trade publishers, from picture books, nonfiction, novels. And everything we get, we catalog, put on our shelves, and librarians from around the state then can come and look at those books when they're trying to make decisions about what to purchase. And then we read a lot of them ourselves. We have four librarians on our staff. We read a lot of the books, and we travel around the state of Wisconsin talking about the books each year that we think are the outstanding books that libraries should be buying, teachers should be reading and sharing in the classroom.
And we have some award winners right here in Wisconsin. You think about Kevin Hankus as an example, believe a Caldecott.
Kevin has won a Caldecott and a Newbery Honor.
Yeah.
He's one of those rare authors, illustrators who not only writes both novels and picture books, but has been recognized for the outstanding quality of both his writing and his illustration. He's also won an award that's specifically for beginning readers. So he kind of covers all of the ground in the children's book world. And I remember when Kevin was first at the CCBC when he was a college student. He came to UW-Madison because of the CCBC, and he spent his freshman year looking at all of the new books and deciding which publishers he especially wanted to approach with his idea for a book.
He's an amazing guy. He's been on the show many times, mm-hmm. and I've had a lot of fun. He's a wonderful person.
He's also very well read, both in adult and children's books.
He is indeed. And he's just one. I'm thinking about Wisconsin authors, Lois Eller, mm-hmm. Kathleen Ernst has sold actually millions of books through her series. Jackie Michaud has written.
Jackie Michaud, yes.
Jacqueline Hauptmann.
Yes, Jacqueline Hauptmann's right here in Madison. And there's also an author named Amy Timberlake who published her first novel was a Newbery Honor book. It's called One Came Home, and it's a historical novel set in Wisconsin. So that one is for about fifth or sixth grade.
You mentioned historical novels for children, and I had Michael Kottman on the show not mm-hmm. long ago. Michael wrote Shackles from the Deep, tracing the sunken slave ship, or the path of a sunken slave ship, I should say. It was a wonderful book he was shooting for about 12-year-old mm-hmm. readers. But here's a black author who was also a scuba diver and dove on that and then decided to trace the history of that particular slave ship. And so it sent him to many countries. And it's quite a little adventure story
mm-hmm.
that I know my daughter's in my daughter's school. The fifth and sixth grade teacher was delighted to get a copy of that particular book
right.
because she happened to be doing a Black History series of things. And you've had a lot of involvement in those kinds of in that area of nonfiction
mm-hmm.
and books that feature minorities.
Right. Well, and I just would say, in general, there is so much outstanding nonfiction for children being published now. If a listener out there is 40 or 50 years old or older, like I am, and you haven't read a nonfiction book published for children since you were a child yourself, I think you would find that the nonfiction books now have changed immensely.
How have they changed?
Well, they no longer make up dialogue. I remember reading biographies when I was a child that had all kinds of made-up dialogue. Everything is documented. A lot of nonfiction writers for children are doing primary research. Sometimes an entire book is based on primary research. And now also because of the changes in production since about 1980 in children's books, they've become highly visual. And yeah. With nonfiction, a lot of the information can be carried in the illustrations as well. And it's that interplay between text and illustrations that can sometimes make a nonfiction book so outstanding.
Yeah, in Michael's book, there's the photography, the photos of the small shackles, the very small shackles that young black children had to wear for 3 months while in a slave ship.
Yeah,
there's some powerful photography there. And his comment was that he wanted to make it kind of like an adventure. You wanted to kind of appeal to make sure that this is not just kind of a bland reading, but he certainly had some excitement.
So the adventure was his search.
His search was the adventure.
Yeah, and that, you see, there's an excellent series out right now called Scientists in the Field that shows a scientist at work, and it has all different kinds of scientists, someone who studies frogs, for example, an astronomer. And you see, you find out about their subject matter, but you also find out about what their jobs are like, what they do day to day, why they got interested in that science in the first place. Sometimes it's an interest they've had since they were a young child, and other times it's something they discovered much later in life. So those are fascinating books. There are about two books out every year. I wish there were two every month in the Scientists in the Field series.
And you recommend, I mean, CCBC has recommendations that people can go online or whatever and see what you're recommending, do you not? Can they not?
Yes, we do. We have a booklet we put out every year called CCBC Choices, and we list about 250 books that we recommend every year. And we read them throughout the year. We discuss them with other people. We discuss them with each other. And we also take into account what we know Wisconsin teachers and librarians are looking for.
Oh, it's wonderful. Well, I tell you what, Dave and Al, we'll get to you in just a minute. I want just a quick reminder here, talking with Katie Horning, a director of the Cooperative Children's Book Center, a library of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, talking about trends in children's books. Call in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network. Talking about trends in children's books today with Katie Horning of the Cooperative Children's Book Center, or CCBC. Let's take some calls. Dave first, then Al. But Dave, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for this wonderful program. Very, very enjoyable. I read avidly to my kids when they were little. They're in their 30s now. It's been a while, but really enjoyed it. I'm really enjoying hearing about the new trends. If you don't mind, I'd like to throw out a title that's actually quite old. Parents who like to sit and read with their kids when they're just old enough to start sitting through some chapters in a longer book. Farley Mowat wrote some fantastic books for kids. The one that we cherished really was Owls in the Family. It reads like a fiction book, but from what I understand, it's based on a lot of his real-life amazing adventures.
Ah, Farley Mowat.
Farley Mowat, yeah. All great stories of the natural world, which is in itself has its own drama. And there are some great writers like Farley Mowat is one. Jean Craighead George is another who write so well about the natural world. Sometimes it's human interactions with animals, and sometimes it's just the animals themselves that you're hearing about.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Thanks for reminding us about Farley. Dave, appreciate it.
Thank you.
Al in Armstrong Creek, it's your turn next. Al, thank you for waiting. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I'm just calling kind of a little bit different. My daughter, when she was in high school, she was a good student, good reader. But she would get tired. She was always really conscientious with her homework, and she would get tired and want to go to bed, and she would have reading for English class. And I used to read to her when she was in high school. Matter of fact, I remember reading Huck Finn specifically and several other books, and it was really enjoyable to read to her as almost an adult. One, because oftentimes the books were adult books, so I enjoyed them rather than just a children's book. And she enjoyed it. You know, her eyes would get tired, and so it was a nice way of kind of connecting. And it helped her out in that she got some homework done because she had reading to do. And it helped me out in that I got to read a good book.
Oh, what a...
Yeah, so don't necessarily stop reading to your kids even as they get older. Like I said, she was a junior, senior in high school I was reading to her.
Oh.
I completely agree with you, Alan. It's so great you were doing that because you were having the shared experience as well. And you could also talk about the book. You knew what she was reading for school, which was also, I think, important. I remember having a similar experience with my younger sister when I was probably just a little out of college. She had to read Of Mice and Men for high school, and she just hated it. She was not a reader. She still is not a reader, but I felt it was so... I loved that book so much. I wanted her to love it, and so I read it aloud to her when I was home on a winter break. And it was a great experience to just have that shared experience with my sister. So I think you're absolutely right. Even after a child starts to read on their own, reading aloud to children of all ages and teenagers and having discussions about them are really great things to do. I'd also add that oftentimes in a family, you have children of different ages. And so reading one book aloud to that will appeal to all different ages, that can be sometimes a little trickier. That's something a public librarian can help you select a book that, you know, might be appealing to both a 5-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 10-year-old. That's a wide age range, and then also think about the attention span differences. There's an author I really like to recommend to adults for reading aloud to children who are, you know, in those age spans, and for the adult themselves. Al made mention of, you know, reading adult books with his teenage daughter, and they were also interesting to him. But there are a lot of children's books that are also of great interest to adults. There's an author named Dick Kingsmith who writes these great animal fantasies. Often his books are set in barnyards, and there is a level of humor for children in those age levels, but there's another level of humor, of social satire for adults, that isn't, you don't feel like the author's winking over the child's shoulder at the adult. It is just a multi-layered book. Phantom Tollbooth is another book like that appeals to children of different ages for different reasons, as well as to adults.
Oh. My daughter Emily starts high school this fall. I'm keeping that idea right in my head. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it very much. Chris in Kenosha, it's your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hi, good afternoon. I was wondering if perhaps you could tell me if there's any website or any kind of reference where I can get information about the context of a book that my preteen daughter, she goes through books so much that I can't keep up, and I'd like to know, you know, exactly.
Oh, we lost Chris. Her phone must have died. Well, Chris, I hope you're at, I hope you're near the radio. So here we've got, what do you folks have, or what can you recommend? She's got sounds like a teenager.
Yeah.
Reading a lot, and it is hard to keep up with.
It's hard to keep up.
Fortunately, I have some trust in the program, the Accelerated Reader Program, mm-hmm. that my daughter's going involved in through school. So that helps a little, because it's pretty much, she only reads books
right
from Accelerated Reader.
Right, but not all schools use that program. But first of all, I would commend Chris for what she's doing, which is really paying attention to what her daughter's reading.
Yes.
And you do have a voracious reader. It's hard to keep up. I think it's possible to read into books a little bit, even if you don't read the whole thing. My mother used to tell me she always read what I was reading after I went to bed at night, so she would know what character I was going to be the next day. Pippi Longstocking years were very difficult for her. In any case, in terms of some kind of a way to figure it out, what they're reading, I think that looking at the book itself, reading into it a little bit, talking to your daughter about what she's reading is really important. So I think Chris is already doing the best thing you can do. I don't know that there are any real shortcuts in that, because your own daughter's interests and your own family's values would vary from other people's. So just keep doing what you're doing and continue to pay close attention to what your daughter's reading and talk about it with her.
Yeah, and sometimes it's hard. I know Emily, I'll ask Emily, well, now, what's this book about? She doesn't like that. Or I'll ask her, well, what excites you about this book? Or mm-hmm. what was the fun part about this book? And that kind of can get her going, talking mm-hmm. about the particular book and what it's about. Mm-hmm. It's sometimes with, well, Emily's 13, so with kids of that age, sometimes they don't want to spend a whole lot of time talking to their dad or their mom about those kinds of things.
Right. True.
Well, I'm sorry we lost you, Chris, but I hope you were able to hear the response from Katie. Josh in Sparta, we'll turn to you next. Josh, hi.
Good morning, Larry.
Morning.
So in the very early 80s, I received a whole series of books. It must have been about 20 books. I can remember very vividly one about Jackie Robinson and one about Louis Pasteur. Mm-hmm. And I can remember the artwork just being amazing. And I was hooked on books the second I got opened up my birthday present there. I can't for the life of me think of what the book series was called.
Mm. Well, is that something you're trying to track down, Josh?
It's actually, if I remember right, it was all value-based books. I can remember Jackie Robinson was like The Value of Courage.
Oh, okay.
Assuming I could Google that now, but this radio show just kind of put me in that thought process, and I thought, I often think of these books every so often when I see a kid reading something. I think, what a great series of books that was.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know exactly off the top of my head what that is, but if you're trying to track it down, if you want to email me, that's my favorite. I shouldn't probably say this to the whole state of Wisconsin, but my favorite type of reference question are people trying to remember a book from childhood where they just remember a few details, like you do, Josh. You're lucky because you remember at least two of the people who were in them, and you remember also that you received them, you know, as a birthday present. If you want to email me, my email address is kt.horning, H-O-R-N-I-N-G, at wisc.edu, and I'd be happy to see if I can track them down for you.
And KT is the letter K and the letter T, by the way.
Right.
Got it. Well, thank you much.
I hope you track them down.
I'm going to read it again today, just like I did when I was 7 years old.
All right. Thanks, Josh. You can join in, too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You have a question about children's books or maybe any experience to share, we'd love to hear it. 1-800-642-1234. Also email us at ideas@wpr.org or phone on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. At the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Don't phone it. Just type in the Larry Mueller Show into Facebook and it'll pop up. You don't need to be a member of Facebook to get on it. And by the way, someone, maybe it was Jill, my on the ball producer, asks, was it Franklin from the Turtle books?
And Franklin,
it was Franklin.
Thank you. I was thinking there was another series of books when I was a child about a character named Timothy Turtle, and I knew that wasn't right, but that was the only name I could think of with the turtle. Franklin, absolutely.
I loved that series. I really enjoyed reading them myself. I thought they were great. Again, not great literature, but fun to read. I remember one about... Turtle had a friend, a goose, who was flying south for the first time. And that was quite a nice little story. Paul in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi.
Hi there. I was just calling in response to one of your last callers who was talking about the books that he couldn't remember that he had read as a child. They're called Value Tales.
Paul, you're doing my job for me.
there's a whole series of them, and they're all with... based on historical figures. My parents had bought, I think, about the whole set for me and my siblings when we were little, and I now have them and read them to my kids, and they're a great series of books.
Oh, well, Value Tales. Thanks, Paul.
Absolutely.
You know, that happens a lot, KT. We have great listeners, and if something comes up and I can't remember, my guests can't remember, almost every time somebody's going to call in and say, I know the answer to that.
Or a producer.
Yeah. Pam in Fitchburg, your turn. Hi, Pam.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I love this topic. I wanted to tell you about a wonderful road trip that my husband and I took with our two adult children. We drove from Madison to Big Sky, Montana, and it was 2 weeks after the last Harry Potter book had been released. And I had gotten that book and saved it for the trip. And we took turns reading aloud to each other as we drove out there. And each night before we went to bed, we read more. Three of us had been reading the series, but the fourth had not read it at all. But he got so engaged in the book that he ended up picking up the rest of the books and reading them from the beginning. And we finished that last book as we hit the Minnesota border, and we stopped with the end of the last, before the last chapter, and all wrote our own idea of what we thought the ending was going to be. And
oh my gosh, I want to take a road trip with you, Pam.
We had so much fun. It was really fun, but we thought that the ending that the author had was excellent, but we enjoyed all of ours, too.
That's really great. You know, Harry Potter was such a phenomenon in its time, and I always refer to people who were children when Harry Potter first came out as the Harry Potter generation, because they had that experience that children after them will never be able to have, although they can still read all the Harry Potter books. They don't have the period of delayed gratification, of waiting for the next book to come out. And there was so much conversation in between books, so much speculation. I've also heard stories about college students, because when the last book came out, the people who had started reading Harry Potter when they were young children, they were in college, and I've heard stories about them reading it aloud to each other over the telephone because they weren't in the same place anymore. And the car trip story is just great. I'll add that to my Harry Potter repertoire when I talk, with your permission, Pam.
Yes, of course.
That's just a great story.
Thank you, Pam. I had another friend who, when the kids were small, his wife would, they had a tape recorder, and she would, before the trip, she would record many books, because they always drove somewhere. And Jim Hoyt, a good friend of mine, and Jim's wife would read those, record all those books, and then they'd play them in the car.
Oh.
That was before...
That was before they had audiobooks. Yeah, and children's audiobooks have just really taken off. It used to be... back in up until even the early 90s, most children's audiobooks were abridged. So you would have, from the mixed up files of Mrs. Basilie Frankweiler in one cassette tape, which you can barely say the title in one cassette tape. But now there are just all kinds of audiobooks for children and teens that are completely unabridged. And it seems like now nearly every book, when it comes out, also comes out in an audio edition. They're extremely popular, and they're great for car trips.
Yeah, my producer, Jill Nadeau, does that a lot. She has a long drive to visit her dad and so forth, and so she always has these audio books that she plugs in, and it's great reading. It's great listening, for sure. Well, John in Rice Lake up next. Hi, John. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a couple comments. The first book I remember reading, I must have been about 3 or 4, was Harry and His Purple Crayon. I haven't seen that book ever since I was a little kid. I've never seen it. Mm-hmm. But it was a little character guy. He was just like a toddler, I guess. And he could draw a picture of a window, climb out his window at night, draw a ladder, climb down the ladder. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a fun little book that way. Of course, nowadays, I don't know if that'd be a good idea teaching kids.
Well, that book is still popular, and you could find it at the public library or in a bookstore. It's by Ruth Krauss, Crockett Johnson. It's called Harold and His Purple Crayon. There's even a children's book agent named Harold Underdown who has called his website Purple Crayon, and he gives all kinds of advice to people. But that's a great I think that's one of the favorite books of Kevin Hankus as a child. So you can see where reading that book led him.
Yeah.
Exactly. And one other comment I wanted to make, too, I can't remember the caller's name, but when I was growing up, I would read 150, 200 pages a night out of a book. Mm-hmm. So what I started doing is I'd have a dictionary and a set of encyclopedias, and I'd probably look up 300 words a night and read 150 pages.
That is a particular type of reading. There are a lot of children who, rather than reading novels or narrative, they enjoy reading almanacs, dictionaries, encyclopedias, and there is blue books. I know a little boy who wanted to read the Wisconsin Blue Book. There's someone I was talking to once who said he really wished someone would do a study of children who were that sort of reader as a child, what they did when they grew up. If it led to a particular career interest.
Yeah, interesting idea. John, thanks so much for calling. Dave in Utica, it's your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hello. This show certainly resonates with me as a parent and now a grandparent, but I thought I'd offer a different perspective that I'm sure will be of no surprise to your guest. I happen to be the director of a summer camp, and reading books to our campers in the evening before they go to bed at night is a strategy that we have used for decades, and I'm sure it's prevalent. I know it's prevalent throughout the camp industry, but in an age-appropriate way, our campers happen to range from 8 to 15, either the boys themselves or their college-age counselors select books. I recall books like David and the Phoenix, Call of the Wild, Old Yeller. I mean, it goes on and on and on. But with children in camps across the country and children everywhere, they're very active in the summer, and just a good way to kind of settle them down for the evening so that they all get a good night's sleep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of parents also have figured that out for bedtime.
Yeah.
Bedtime reading. And, you know, in terms of using books as a way of settling children down or drawing them in, my brother used to take a book to the bus stop and read aloud to the children while they were waiting for the bus, because there was a lot of kids there. They're a little rambunctious, easily able to step out into the street because they're playing around. And so he found if he just read aloud to them, they would all pay attention. Sometimes the bus would come before a chapter was over, but they'd be back the next day for more.
Oh, Dave, thank you so much. I really appreciate your call. In grade school, we had several grades in the same room, and our teacher would read in the morning to us for 10 minutes or so, and she always quit on a cliffhanger.
Oh, yeah.
So One Eye, I can still remember that book. I think I got to learn to really love reading just based on listening to her read to us.
Mm-hmm.
She was really good at it.
Teachers who read aloud to their classes can make such a difference in a child's life. And again, as the caller said earlier, even after the children have learned to read, if a teacher is reading aloud, a daily read aloud, it can make a huge difference. I remember my fourth grade teacher reading Johnny Tremaine aloud to us, and I thought I was being very clever by going to the public library and checking it out and reading ahead because I couldn't wait to see what happened next.
Oh, man. Well, my teacher was Eleanor Dahl, and she was a wonderful, I think she won the award for Teacher of the Year for the state of Wisconsin one year. She was a delight and a magnificent person. Well, we have, you know, this National Library Week, what's the role of the library in the community, and has it changed over the years? It certainly has, I think.
Well, it has, but there are certain things that librarians continue to do, and one of them is for children to continue to recommend great books for them, to help them find books that will interest them, and to keep them reading, especially in the summer, but after school is out, to read all summer long.
I know many of the libraries have summer reading programs, and they're absolutely wonderful. And there are no more helpful people in the whole world than librarians. I have called the local library with questions, and they are very diligent in their help and always do it in a friendly way.
Well, that's good to hear. And I actually use the library myself all the time. And it is a great resource for people in our society at large. And Madison Public Library here in Madison is wonderful. I've traveled around Wisconsin. I know Appleton Public is great, La Crosse Public. There's so many wonderful libraries in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, this has been a delight, KT. I hope you'll come back and be with us again. I'd love to do this every so often, because here I had a whole bunch of questions and I hardly got through any of them.
I'll have to come back then.
Then you got to come back. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Catherine, KT Horning, director of the Cooperative Children's Book Center, a library of the University of Wisconsin, Madison, and she's the author of From Cover to Cover, Evaluating Children's Books. She teaches an online course on the history of the Newbery and Caldecott medals as well. And if you go to the Cooperative Children's Book Center, CCBC, you go online to that, you type that in, you're going to find it. We have a link on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show as well, and you're going to find out all the great things that they have to offer on that site. Love to talk with her, and we will do this again. Coming up next, actually, KT, this was her first time with us. Coming up next, a guy that's been with us several times, Paul Kinzer, author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy, our next guest coming up on the Ideas Network. Stay with us.